This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal. I would like to thank everyone joining us tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and to those of you listening on our website at horseracingradio.net. As you know, we are big supporters of the PDJF, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, here on Jock Talk. And the PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. They rely solely on donations. So if you are able to help, please visit the website, www.pdjf.org. So my guest this evening, he's a retired jockey who, after numerous injuries, miraculously is still able to climb aboard a horse every day, but not just any horse. In fact, he was the regular exercise rider for California Chrome. Before that, he rode everything from Arabians to mules to thoroughbreds and even bull riding. I can't wait to hear his incredible story. Dehashi Gladney, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh, I just can't even. I told you I was doing research before the show today, and you have an incredible story. Of course, highlighted by the fact that you've been aboard one of greatest racehorses of all time here recently, and of course, California Chrome just recently ran in the Pegasus, and that was his last race. Has to be a little bit of, I don't know, what are you feeling now that you know he's gone to stud and you won't be able to ride him every day like you were? How do you feel about that?
You know, it's different. It's going to definitely be different. It takes some time. You know, it hasn't really hit me hard yet, but I would say that last week of actually going into training, normally going into the race, I'm like, wow, this is actually it. You know, I think it all started kind of coming down, maybe like day two. You know, starting to realize, you know, this is going to be my last morning galloping him. Tomorrow will be my last morning to actually jog him the day of the race. And, you know, things start playing back in your mind. You start remembering all the good times you had with him, along with the bad things. But, you know, at the end of it, you got to realize everything good that came out of it. And he gave us all a chance to have the fun. That was the most important part.
Oh, my gosh. He gave you that experience. He gave us all. What an incredible experience to follow his career and what success he had. Oh my gosh, I mean, it was a incredible ride, I'm sure, Dehashi. And what was he like? What was he like to gallop every morning?
You know, he definitely knew what type of horse he was. You know, his personality was totally different from any horse I've ever been around. And, you know, I thought I had been around a lot of horses until I met this horse. You know, some days you will get off of him and you look him in the face and you wonder, who are you? You know, you're not just a horse. Who died and came back a horse? And I'm able to be reunited with you because everything he brought every day, it was just amazing. You know, his whole personality, you know, he knew that he was king of the hill, you know, when he was out there. You know, he never was the type of horse that got overexcited or not. You know, it's been a lot of mornings, though, that people have witnessed me on him where he's reared up and walked on his hind legs better than any horse I've ever seen in the circus. And I'm like, just please get back on the ground anytime you want to. But, you know, he's not that type of horse where he's trying to throw it at you every day. You know, he loved to train. You know, it's been mornings after we get through training. He don't want to go back in the stall. He wants to drag you by back into the walking ring because he don't want to go in. He just likes being outside all the time. And if any time there was a lot of people around, whether they were photographers or just anybody coming to visit him, he really put a show on. You know, you would think he was a kid. You never let outside some days because it's been raining, and when it's time to go in, he throw a fit. So, you know, the whole thing with him was just amazing altogether, just to be around him and see everything he brought, not only for me but for everybody around him. You know, it was amazing.
He was incredible, and great horses are like that. They just love what they do, and they love to train. And how did you first happen to get that mount?
Well, I have been helping the Sherman, you know, off and on. You know, I've been on him for years. You know, I would go by and help him with a horse or something, you know, maybe work a step for him here and there. And I was actually working for them at the time, you know, before Chrome came in. And you know, after his run there, you know, after the Breeders' Cup, after he went to Dubai and then wound up sending him over to England, and nah, that didn't work good. And, you know, Taylor Mays got him involved with him, and they sent him to the farm. And, you know, we kind of had an idea that he might be coming back, but not for sure. And at the time, Alan had showed me a video of him when he went to go visit him, and I'm like, who is that? He's like, that's Chrome. I'm like, no, that's not Chrome. Who is that? This horse looked like he had put on like 200 pounds or so.
Wow.
He was all big and muscled up, you know, and just to see him and to see that he was doing so good, he was so happy, the color of his body, everything, you know. A lot of times, you know, people always say, oh, it's just another red horse. That's not another red horse. That horse has something special about him. And, you know, when we found out, you know, he was actually going to come in, you know, I spoke with Alan and Arden. You know, they kind of told me, you know, I might be, you know, the rider for him. And I'm starting thinking like, oh, wow, you know, it's going to be good. I know that. But the thing about Chrome and any horse of this nature, you know, you got to realize that type of horse is going to take a lot of your time. And when I say a lot of your time, you know, for me, you know, I have kids, you know, I have a pony ride business. So, you know, you got to play your part. Okay, you know, if this horse starts doing good, it's going to be some traveling involved. Then you got to start thinking ahead, how am I going to get all this planned out to be able to go with it? But, you know, the opportunity was there, and I have no regrets.
No regrets, definitely not, Dehashi. And was he tough in the mornings? You mentioned he was a little bit, you know, when he was feeling good, he can, you know, rear up and walk there on his back legs. But was he tough?
You know, he was tough, but not that runaway, you know, hard jaw where you ain't control him tough. It's so funny about him because he really loved to train with horses. You know, he would always gallop, you know, with the horses in the morning there at Los Alamitos, and he loved it, you know. But, you know, we would work him on Saturdays, and, you know, at 5:20 before the track actually opens up at 5:30, and he would be out there with his, you know, on his own. You know, even though he would work good, you could always feel that he just wanted something else out there to look at, just so he could show off going by and let them know, hey, I got these fast wheels up under me. I want to show you how fast I am. You know, it's been a lot of times, you know, someone that went by me galloping, like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, no, it's okay. I'm like, he don't mind. You know, you could run behind him, run to the side of him, whatever it took. He just locked in. He just loved to go, you know. But a horse could not pass him, and he just sit there. He never would get off that horse until he passed him. Once he passed that horse, he eyed himself on, then he would come back to you. But you better be tied on until he get past that horse. He did not like being beat.
Competitive.
Absolutely.
I watched the work there at Gulfstream and the most recent work before his last race, and he looked just like he was floating on the ground. I mean, what was he like to actually breeze? What was that feeling like?
You know, it's so funny, you know, when you breeze him, he's a different type of horse. And like you said, that last work going into the race was amazing. You know, we had worked him that previous Saturday before, and the track was a little heavy, but he still got over it, you know, pretty good. And I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, if you look at his body type, he's not a real big, heavy horse. You know, he's normal size, but he doesn't carry that big, muscular body where it looks like he's struggling all the time. And I think that's helped us a lot with him at almost any track we've ever been with him to training and the running because of, you know, the surface that he run on, because of the weight he carried, he was able to get over it, you know, without a struggle. You know, he just he would just breathe so good. You know, you get that feeling when you're breathing him and you pass the wire and you wonder, wow, I want you to go back around again. And he would if you asked him, you know. He just that type of horse, you know, just good feeling, just a smooth ride. And the way he traveled, it was just as smooth as any horse you could ever think about.
Wow. I'm jealous. That sounds like such an amazing feeling. Oh, my gosh. He just glides through it, like you said. And what, of course, everyone knows that after watching the race, it was a disappointing outcome, of course, to go out. That was his last race and finished ninth, I guess, and, you know, just wasn't himself that day. And what do you think happened?
You know, Christina, to be honest, I've never seen Chrome so laid back. You know, normally gets himself a little warm, but not, you know, too warm. He was, you know, just dry throughout the whole, you know, post, you know, walking ring there. You know, we saddled him and we kind of kept him outside. Actually, him and Eric, we kept walking him out on the end of the grandstand because it was so hot under that tunnel. And, you know, you get 12 horses bunched in this one little area that you can just feel that body heat. So we actually took him outside and kind of walked him around. And the weather was really good by the time their race come around. And, you know, when we legged Victor looked at me, he's like, wow, he looked good. He wasn't hot. He, you know, he just looked good. And, you know, we watched him in the post parade. And, you know, he kind of did a normal thing going through the gateway. He kind of wanted to turn his body a little sideways. And Victor kind of gave him a little pop. And they loaded it. You know, I knew that, you know, kind of coming from the 12-hole would be a bit of a task for him. You know, he's been breaking sharp, you know, all his previous races. He broke pretty good. Not as quick as I thought he would have broke. But, you know, just watching that race, you know, and I watched the replay of it, it seemed like, you know, going on the backside, when him and Eric and they were running third and fourth, when Mike went to take off, Victor asked him to go, he probably went maybe 50 yards, and that was it. You know, yeah. He just got flat. And, you know, I'm just like, okay, what's going on here? You know, normally this horse, you know, you ask him to go, he goes. You know, he's never a horse that I work, you know, to have to, I never sit down on him to gas him on or anything. He hit the biggest wall I've ever seen for a horse of his caliber. I mean, you know, I mean, and he came back, you know, good. You know, we looked at him, you know, when he pulled him up, you know, we went there, we met him and we was taking him back. You know, I walked him after the race. He was just dragging me around the share row, which was real surprising. You know, we had him scoped. He didn't bleed or anything. You know, even going back to the barn, he never made a noise, you know, like he might have bled, no coughing. You know, he wasn't short of breath. He drank a little more water than he normally does, but that was to be expected, you know, weather-wise over there and getting his adrenaline all up. But yeah. I don't know. It was just a shock to not only to me, you know, all the fans there, the world, because this horse has put out his all, you know, every time that he's run there. You know, he's been that type of horse when you know that you're going to hang that bridle on him race day that he's going to show up. You know, there's never a win guaranteed. But when you walk a horse over like Chrome, you almost know you're going to get your picture taken. So it was rough. It was tough to swallow, that's for sure.
Well, I know how I felt watching the race live. And like you said, whenever Mike Smith went to move on Arrogate, you see Victor trying to make that same move, and it was just Arrogate went forward and Chrome tried for a brief time and then he just went backwards. And I just remember I felt so heartbroken, not for me, not for anyone else, but the horse, because you want him to go out a winner, obviously, his last race. And I can't imagine how you must have felt. That had to be like watching your kid, you know, and you had to be obviously greatly concerned and, you know, to watch what was so abnormal to his running style, of course. And, you know, thank God he came back okay. And now he's going to be living the good life, you know?
Yeah. He's going to TaylorMade Farms. He's on a stallion. And, you know, it's going to be good for him. You know, he's just that type of horse, you know. Everything comes to an end, you know. It was the end for us there. And like you say, you know, I could have never drew that up, that the outcome would turn out the way it did. You know, if I had felt anything with this horse, you know, in his morning training, believe me, you know, we would have definitely went over it, you know. He was just so good, you know, that last week of training. You know, you know, there's so many, you know, video of him out every morning. You know, they would, you know, record me, you know, backtracking and turn around galloping. And you can watch every one of those mornings. He just took a hold every time. You know, he was never off anywhere. He was just comfortable the whole trip. You know, it almost felt like that last week when we were going into Dubai for the big race. You know, that confident feeling. And when you start feeling that, you just start thinking about all the good things that has happened before, and it starts making you get happy before the race even gets there. You're like, okay, here we go again. You know, so, yes, you know, that race really took a lot out of us, you know, the whole Chrome team, you know. And, you know, the most important thing was that Chrome was able, you know, to come back, you know, okay or whatever. But, you know, I think he realized that it wasn't his performance, too, because I've never seen a horse after a race like him that was so eager. I mean, you know, normally, you know, you got to drag him around there at the end of that shank. He pulled me for like 20 minutes after that race around that Chevrolet to cool him down. I mean, just dragging. I'm like, wow, okay. You know, I thought he was tough after the Breeders' Cup when he ran second. That was a tough race to take him back. If that was the talk, he would have told us to put him back in the gates again. He was not happy about losing that day at all.
Oh, my gosh. The Haji Gladney joining me here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, so Haji, what an incredible ride with California Chrome, and we're all sad that it's over, but he's going on to make babies, and that'll be great for him. And as I mentioned in the introduction, just the fact that your galloping period is incredible. Your story is just astounding, given the fact you had so many numerous injuries and the fact that you grew up the way you grew up and you found the horses. And I would love to get into that now. And you grew up in L.A., is that right?
Yes, I grew up in L.A. It's an area called Watts, which is very, very not horse-orientated, you know. It's amazing, though, when you know, when people really realize what part of L.A. I'm from. Like, man, there's no horses over there. Ain't nothing over there. But I say, what, gangbangers, liquor stores, police officers? And they start laughing. I say, well, I'm an exception. I say, you know, Watts produced me, so I got to represent where I come from. But there are areas within Compton that's actually zoned for horses. You wouldn't know it driving by. You know, they look like regular homes until you look in somebody's driveway and see a horse trailer, which is not unusual. You know, some people have horse trailers in their driveway and keep horses somewhere else. But then when you walk in the backyard, you walk up onto some stalls, you wonder, what is this all about? it's really amazing. It's really amazing, you know, when you figure out the whole history of these areas that you thought nothing goes on over there but basketball courts and swimming pools. But, yes, there's horses in the ghetto.
Horses in the ghetto. And how did you first come about learning to ride?
You know, I want to say, I can't call it, I guess I'm privileged. I was privileged. My granddad had a rental stable ever since my mom and I were kids. So it was going to be destined for somebody to come along and kind of pick up the reins and keep it going. And my aunt and them always told me they were so glad when they found out my mom was having a boy. They said, "Woo! Now they finally got a way out of here. They were going to teach me everything so they could go and do what they wanted to do or whatever." And, you know, I guess it was for the best. You know, growing up, me and my granddad, we were best friends. You know, I never had a, you know, I guess for me, a childhood was one of the best things for me. You know, Here I am. I got a new pony almost every Christmas. You know, if it wasn't a pony my granddad had already, he would buy me another one, you know, find me something. But it was definitely an experience, you know, not only for me, not only for my cousins and everybody, you know, that worked for my granddad, grew up riding horses, but within this kids in the neighborhood, period, you know, my granddad gave them something positive to look to. You know, after school, you know, weekends, you know, he had a lot of ponies, way more than I have. You know, he would sit up in two or three different locations in one day, and, you know, he provided jobs for these kids on the weekend to keep them busy, keep them out of trouble. And they really appreciated that, you know, not only the kids, but the parents of the kids, too. You know, it was a good thing for all of us growing up, you know, to be able to deal with horses, to deal with ponies. You couldn't get in trouble because you were too tired seeing the stalls all day. So when you went home, all you want to do was eat and go to sleep and get ready to start all over again the next day.
Yeah. Well, and to grow up in that kind of an area, what a you know, what a special thing he had for those kids and for yourself. And he sounds like such a wonderful mentor to you. What did he teach you in those early days?
You know, the most important part, he wanted me to know everything it was, you know, about being a horseman. You know, just watching him, you know, from going to regular horse auction, buying these little rescue ponies, making them look like they had a new life again, and just being around people and treating them good. You know, you treat people the way you want to be treated. And everything he brought was positive for me. You know, he only wanted me to do good. You know, he was very supportive of me and everything I did. You know, he, you know, all through school, you know, his main thing, though, he didn't care about how much I cared about them horses. He wanted me to do good in school. Mm. So that was his main goal. You know, he always say, you know, when they grew up as kids, you know, they didn't really have a chance to go to school all the time because they had to help his parents, you know, run a farm. You know, they had to do this, they had to do that. So, you know, when you talk to a lot of guys at that horse stable, not only my granddad, you know, that stable was full of anybody you could ever think about that came from any state you could think about, you know. Some of those people, their highest education might have been the third or fourth grade. But, you know, they were kids and they had to work to provide to help, you know, their family be able to eat. So, you know, when you come from somewhere like that and you're able to help other people, whether it's your family or who else, you know, you put a lot into it. And that was my granddad's main goal is, you know, education first over anything. You know, like you say, hey, if you're smart, you can always learn to ride these horses. He used to always have me say, I don't want a dummy working my pony ride. Get to school. So that was his most important part. He did not care about that. He always said, I got people work for me. Your job is to go to school. So, yes, he definitely put his foot down on that education thing.
He wanted something better for you. He didn't get that, and he wanted that for you. And how old were you when you first sat on the back of a horse?
I don't even think I was one. My aunt then was riding me around. So they say I've been riding forever. You know, they say they would look up and I'll be asleep. You know, they'd start off riding with me and they start off on a trail ride and they'd be trying to bring me back and say by the time they get ready to take me off, I'll go to holler. So they go right back down the trail with me again. So yes, horse was definitely gonna be my life, that's for sure.
Right from the get-go, Yashi, yeah, right from the get-go. And eventually, I find it very interesting that you kind of steered more towards bull riding.
I did. You know, I never thought about becoming a jockey. Never even thought about going to a racetrack. You know, growing up as a kid, you know, my granddad didn't have these ponies. And, of course, you know, any kid that thinks they can ride, you're going to always try to fix a race with one of your friends. So I had been riding these little match races before I could even knew exactly what I wanted to do. But, you know, getting back to it, you know, racetrack was nowhere something I thought about because I knew no African-Americans into the racing business. You know, growing up, my idol was Charlie Sampson. We called him Pee Wee, who's the only African-American to ever win a world championship in bull riding. And the reason why I wanted to follow him so much is because we come from the same horse stable. So he wasn't just the guy that I actually heard about or would see on TV. I would see him, you know, here and there. You know, he would come to the stable sometime and come see it, you know, bring posters, you know, and things and sign them for us. And, you know, we would go watch him when the great, you know, the farm where the L.A. Lakers used to play, you know, they used to throw rodeos there. So, you know, that was right at home for us. So you get all these. Everybody from the horse, they would pile down there into the farm. It was like having a stable reunion down there. So, you know, Petey was definitely my idol growing up. I wanted to be more like him than anything. You know, I was always Charlie Sampson for Black History Month, Career Day. Anything that had to do with somebody famous that you wanted to be or you knew, I was definitely him. So, yes, I wore cowboy boots and a cowboy hat to school more often than anybody you ever seen.
Wow, Charles Pee Wee Sampson,
first
African American world champion in bull riding. And what did you first think when you decided to try riding the bulls? I mean, I can't imagine, you know, when you're a rider, obviously your goal is to stay on the back of a horse. And so going in knowing that eventually you're going to get bucked off and try to hang on for as long as you can. That's like, that's so weird to me, I guess.
Well, yeah, you know, this whole bull riding thing, you know, when I first started rodeo, when I actually started off riding bareback horses, I wanted to be a bull rider, but once we showed up to the first rodeo and I kind of got to look over there in that pen and see those horns hanging in front of my head, I'm like, yeah, I don't know, maybe let me try these horses the first time. But those horses were so hard to ride. You had to mark them out. You got to get your feet set. So this guy comes to me and told me, he say, don't you want to be like Pee-wee? I say, yes, I do. He say, Pee-wee don't ride bucking horses. He ride bulls. So I said, okay. So I switched over to riding bulls. And let me tell you, I've had my share of injuries riding bulls. I think all the injuries riding bulls kind of prepared me for the racetrack.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I would never take none of it back. All the experiences I had, the people I met on the way, it's definitely something that you look back in life, and I've had a lot of fun, you know, and the memories would never leave. You know, it's been good for me. So I definitely have no complaints about that.
How long did you ride bulls for?
I started riding bulls my junior year of high school, and I rode maybe about four years, and it seemed like every year I had a new injury coming up. So you know, after a while, you know, when I was riding bulls, my grandma, it's so funny because I think about it and I laugh sometimes to myself. She could sit through that whole rodeo and just clap and applaud for everybody that she'd seen and knew, all the kids that had grown up and they're participating. And when that announcer say, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the roughest sport in rodeo, she get up and leave. She always got to go to the bathroom. I don't think she's never watched me ride a rodeo in the grandstand. She can only hear it from the bathroom. So when I look back at that, me and my mom, we laugh about that all the time. I say, if she never had to use the bathroom, all you got to do is mention rodeo and bull riding. Off she went running.
I understand that. My own mother, I had many injuries in my riding career, and she got to the point where she couldn't watch the races live. She had to wait until it was over and then look at the results, and then she'd go back and watch the replay. But I can imagine your grandma, I mean, again, bull riding, you're going to fall off, and it's even more dangerous. I can't imagine your poor grandmother, what was going through her head.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, I have to, you know, people say, oh, man, those bulls are mean. They see red, they charge. They don't just see red and charge. They charge because they want to charge. You could be wearing pink. And if that bull feel like running you over, guess what? He runs you over. So it's not the colors you have on. They have something that goes on in here. And not every bull is mean, you know. You know, riding bulls, you know, I've had bulls buck me off and I fell off right beside them and they stop like a horse and wait on you like, okay, get back on. Never turn their heads to try to horn you. Never try to run you over or nothing. All they want to do is someone to open up that catch fence so they can go back to eating and sunbathing. Again, that's all they wanted.
We'll continue our visit with the Haji Gladney after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Luis Saez had a great week in Florida as he won both OBS Sprint Stakes at the Ocala Training Center and the Grade 3 Hurricane Birdie at Gulfstream Park aboard Curlin's Approval. Saez finished the week with 5 wins, 4 seconds, and 7 third place finishes. Irad Ortiz Jr. took the lead in the Aqueduct jockey standings by winning an impressive 40% of his mounts. Ortiz Jr. led all North American riders with 10 wins and added 4 seconds and 4 third place finishes from 25 mounts. Finally, the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Jose Ortiz, started his weekend off right by finishing second in the Pegasus World Cup aboard Shaman Ghost, earning a nice $1.75 million. Ortiz then made the most out of his first trip to Sam Houston on Sunday as he won 3 stakes, including the Grade 3 John B. Connolly Turf Cup aboard Bigger Picture and the Grade 3 Houston Ladies Classic aboard Unbridled Mo. Ortiz finished the week with 6 wins, 7 seconds, and 1 third place finish. John Parada's newest book, Half a Chance, is available now at JockeyTalk360.com. Half a Chance is the story of a down-on-his-luck jockey agent who finds himself entangled in a web of deceit and larceny and provides the kind of entertaining read that is ideal for any racing fan. Visit JockeyTalk360.com for more information. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Frosted letting go, he'll be 5 wide on the turn. Then came Candy Boy, Gun Pit, and opportunity as they fight for the run of the judge. California Chrome out wide and loomed up. Monsieur Wish in the center, Bob to Hedge on the rail. They get away from Special Fighter, but California Chrome has gone into overdrive. He's 2 lengths in front. Clear of Mob to Hedge battling on, then Monsieur Wish, but it's California Chrome in front. It's Alchemy in Dubai. Chrome turns to gold. California Chrome wins the Dubai World Cup from Mob to Hedge and opportunity.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by Dehaji Gladney, regular exercise rider for California Chrome. And of course, Dehaji, we just heard that replay of the Dubai World Cup in 2016, where, of course, California Chrome was victorious. The saddle slipped. I mean, that was just incredible. And what was it like, real quick, before we get back to where we were at before the break, what was that like to watch that race?
Amazing, amazing. You know, once they loaded and he broke, you know, we were, you know, concerned a little bit about the post position. You know, we went to the draw, and me and Art were sitting there next to one another. He said, "What hole do you think we should get?" I said, "Anything." I said, "But if you can't, try to get between the 5 and the 7. I'm like, this horse is so sharp. Every spot we wanted got taken. And, you know, when it came, we only had 3 spots left, the 12 hole, the 11 hole, and the 1 hole. And then Chrome had won a race there in February, a month before, you know, Dubai World Cup. And I told him, get the 1 hole. We've already won out of it once. I'm like, we'll be okay. They put Keen Heights in the 1 hole. I'm like, are you serious? You put this giant in the hole we want? And we wound up, you know, or gets 11 hole or whatever. And that horse was so sharp that night, though. You know, when he left there, he left there running. He runs so fast, he actually made the saddle slip back, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
and we never really noticed it. And we're watching the race on the 16th, and I'm standing there next to Raul, the groom, and I'm looking like, no, it can't be. As they get closer, and he run by, I say, Raul, the saddle's back. Raul's like, yeah, no, he looks good. I say, no, the saddle's back. Raul's like, oh, my God. He takes off running across the track to go meet him, you know, by the time Victor had pulled him up or whatever, but... You know what? It's a pure blessing that nothing bad happened. It could have been really bad, but that night, I don't care. He was not to be denied a win. They could have rode that horse bareback.
Yes.
He just had run on his mind altogether.
when I saw that and I saw the saddle and I was like, how is he doing? You know, that as far back as it slipped, that had to be uncomfortable. And the fact that, oh, he didn't care. Oh, whatever. You know, he just, that was incredible. That was incredible. And he took you and everyone else on an incredible journey during his career. But let's get back to where we were, Dehaji, before we went to the break. You're telling me about your bull riding career and the numerous injuries that went along with that. How many bones, just overall, bull riding races, galloping horses, how many bones have you broken?
What should I start from? My fingers, my shoulder, collarbone, my ankle, my back. You know, almost any bone you could touch on me probably has been broke. I would probably say, well, I broke both ankles on, you know, each side. Two of the injuries that really stand out more than anything, riding bulls, I actually broke all the ribs on my left side and punctured my lungs. That put me in the hospital for like 13 days. My biggest injury, though, is when I broke my back there at Los Al Ride Race. I was gone, you know, right at 5 years from that. That was the hardest. That was the hardest one of all because they didn't know if I was going to even walk again.
Wow.
You know, this pure determination kind of got me going or whatever. But it was bad. It was bad, you know. That was the roughest time of my life, I'd say.
Gosh. Well, let's get to that point. So prior to your horrific back injury, you decided to start to go to the racetrack and to start riding races eventually. And how did you come to that decision?
You know, injury after injury, it's hard to want to do something different sometimes, you know? and, you know, I don't know. It seemed like every time, you know, they say every time you get something good going, something bad always happens to you, man. Just one thing after another just led into, you know, you stop here, you start there.
And then you decided the bulls, that's just, you were done with that and went to the racetrack and you decided to take out your jockey license.
Correct. You know, after, you can only get beat up so much as a bull rider. I think I'm spending more time under them. And then the hospital actually on top of them. I said, you know, I'm going to try the racetrack. And I don't know. I always tell them, I say, you know, you can't really take a bull ride and bring him to the track. But you can almost take somebody from the track and probably teach them how to ride rough stock. But I always say, I think the part about me making a switch over is because I have always ridden horses all my life. You know, working for my granddad as a kid, you know, riding those little ponies he always had. People sending him these little wild mules and ponies through the summer for me and my cousin and them to break, it only gave me a lot of experience. And, you know, and riding the little match race ponies my granddad and them had, you know, I've always wanted that speed, but I didn't think I would be able to go to the track and actually get real speed up under me. So it was new, you know, it was different. It took some getting used to. But you know what? It was an experience. I got there. I met a lot of good people. They took me in, you know, they really showed me what the business was about, you know, the way you approach things. And I'm very thankful for that.
Once it's in your blood, the horses, you can't stay away. You can't stay away. No, no, it's calling you back. And you went to the racetrack and you decided, yeah, bull riding was very dangerous. And of course, riding races is too, as you would later find out. But what was that like? That had to be good, in my opinion, to go from bull riding to riding racehorses. You get on some of those crazy things in the morning. They're trying to throw you off too, you know? Had to make you a better rider.
Yeah. You know what? You know, when you first show up anywhere, you always want to make a standout for yourself. And, you know, a lot of the trainers and owners knew me because of, you know, they knew about me riding bulls, and, you know, they knew some of the people from the horse stable where I grew up at or whatever. So the first thing they say when I get there, oh, don't worry about that bad horse. How should you get on him? Really? Now I got to come here and be a cowboy, huh? But it helped, you know. I was able to ride anything they threw up under me and kind of made a name for myself. So that really helped me, you know, as an exercise rider when I was just starting to get myself going before I really actually wanted to take out a jock license, you know. It just helped the whole business, the whole career. Everything for me, when people look back, hey, he had no complaints when we asked him to get on this horse. let's give him a shot on this one now. So it all worked out just good.
How did you feel when you rode your first race? I'm assuming because I've never ridden bulls, but you have to get that rush. You have to get that rush, and that's why you do it. Even with, you know, the injuries and the hard life, it has to be. You get a rush from it, and obviously, I got a rush when I rode races, and that's why I did that. Did you get that same kind of an adrenaline rush when you rode your first race?
You know what? I want to say I did, but, you know, I was just surrounded by some Hall of Fame jockeys there in that jock room in La Salle that they kept me settled. They kept me calm. They let me know, hey, we excited for you, but this is still a dangerous job. We want you focused. Because remember, we out there with you, too. You ain't just out there by yourself. So, you know, we want your mind right, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you what, from the time I showed up in that jock room that day, put my pants on, getting ready for the race, put the silks on till we walked out, they were in my ear, all in the postal rate. We don't care what you do, make it back safe. They say, and the most important part, don't run us over. So, you know, it was some fun to it at all, but they just wanted me to learn the game. You know, that's all that was, you know. And I had great teachers. You know, that was a good thing for me. You know, those guys took me, and, hey, it was good. It was good.
Who all was in the room with you at the time?
You know, when I first started, I was still lucky. You still had, you know, good quarter horse guys like Eddie Garcia, who still rides. John Krager was there. Steve Treasure, Ramon Figueroa, Joe Badia was there. You know, Alex Batista. You know, both the Batista, Carlos and Alex was there. You know, and at the time, I think Kemp Dickinson had made a comeback, who was one of my, you know, quarter horse idols, and to ride with them guys, you know. But just to see class in the way they did it, you know, when you start out as a jock, you know, and you watch these guys, you know, I would go to the races almost every night just to see what they did as a rider, you know, how they spoke to people, you know, the way they approached the whole game. You know, I would get there for the first race and leave after the last race. Like, I was actually riding races, but I was preparing myself if this is something I really wanted to do. And, you know, it just started getting better to me. Everything started looking like it was much easier, and then I was ready to take it on, and it became good. It became good.
Was the weight difficult for you?
You know what? Starting out at first, no. I guess because I was younger, you know, I didn't battle my weight. You know, you always kind of talk to guys. They always say they don't give a secret because that's their job, but those guys, you know, they were more than open to me about everything that they did, you know, how they kept their weight down, what they did, what not to ever do to get in the predicament that they were in.
Right.
It was a learning experience. You know, it wasn't just a job I went to. Those guys really took me in. You know, I was like one of their own kids, like a little brother to them or something. And, you know, they didn't have to do that, but they did, you know, and I respect them to today. For everything they showed me, you know. I mean, they took what they knew and they put it into me. So I was going to be their product, and I was going to make them happy.
And it is funny how the jocks room, obviously everyone's competitors, but at the same time, you're all like a family because y'all have the same goal in mind and you're all going through the same trials and tribulations to get there. And it is like a family in the jocks room, and it's pretty amazing that it is like that. Like I said, everyone's competitive, but it is a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, you know, you never want to go in there, you know, like you know more than anybody, because I went in there knowing nothing. So I went in there with my ears open and my eyes sure enough buffed and paying attention to what was going on, because I wanted to take in everything they had to offer me, because, hey, they didn't care about road bulls. This is, like they say, this ain't the rodeo slick. This is the racetrack. So everything they taught me, I needed to be able to pay attention then and not ask them a second time. They don't want to hear no, huh, what you say? That's what they didn't want to hear. They wanted me to say, oh, okay, I got it, and move on to the next thing.
Got it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you rode, you didn't just ride thoroughbreds. You rode everything. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I did. You know, that's the thing. You know, I think coming up at Los Alamitos, if they were there training and they could enter them, I was gonna ride them. I've ridden almost everything you could think about. I ever had a bridle and a saddle on them. I haven't ridden camels and elephants yet, But I've ridden the Appaloosas, the Mules, the Arabians, the Thoroughbreds, the Quarter Horses. And I'm very thankful. You know, I have been successful in every breed that I've ridden. You know, I've won races. And, you know, and good races aboard them, too. You know, the Mules was definitely an experience. Those wild things.
Wow.
Oh, my God. They are something to remember. If you ride a Mule one time, believe me, you get to respect everybody. I don't care what race you get. All you got to do is say, I rode a Mule, and it's like they bow down to your feet. Congratulations. It was definitely something to ride down, that's for sure.
What were they like?
Oh, my God. They were wild. You know, they laughed. Some of the guys got me to ride. I used to rodeo with a couple guys that, actually, Robert Boyce, who used to be a jockey, and his brother Scott, he used to work for Randy Bradshaw or whatever, and he shoes horses now. They convinced me to ride a Mule over here. And well, the first time I rode one was at Fresno, and I was calling to the gate, and I'm looking at the big rope they got on him, and I think they're going to take this rope off. They tied a rope around his neck in the gate, and I went to hollering. These guys are laughing so hard in the starting gate. I mean, they almost couldn't get up to hold the other jockey's Mule head. They were just laughing so hard at me. I'm like, hey, you told me this thing is gentle. Those guys were rolling. But, you know, it was fun. It was fun. You know, it's like, you know, like when I first come back, you know, been gone so long, I wind up riding some of the Mule races there in Pomona. And they might have had maybe six Mule races or something. And I think I probably won like three of them or something. So this one reporter comes to me, and he's all excited, like, oh, my God, man, you know, you're doing it. You know, you're on your comeback, and here you are riding these Mules, too, and you won like half the races so far. You know, what's your secret? And I look around. I'm like, can you really keep a secret? He's like, yeah, like I ride with my eyes closed. He's like, what? Okay. I told him I don't open them up until I hear the crowd. Yay! I'm like, I want to see where I'm going at all. No,
oh, wow.
But it was just fun. It was fun, you know, just to ride with those guys that actually rode those Mules, you know, because they start like in May before they start a big circuit during the summer. And, you know, they knew almost every Mule. It's like going to one of your top jocks in the room to ride Thoroughbreds or ride Quarter Horse, and you tell him, hey, why'd you take off this horse? He can tell you exactly why he took off, because I want to ride this horse, because this horse didn't do that. Same thing with those guys that ride Mules. They'll tell you which ones to ride and which ones to never ride.
Which ones, they really
helped me out in that part.
Which ones you don't want to ride, exactly.
Exactly.
So I never rode mules, Diaji, but I did win a race on a camel, I will say that. But that's a different story for a different day. But anyway, side note. But Diaji, I got to watch the clock. The time is ticking. My gosh, I could spend an hour. I could spend hours talking to you here on the show, but
that's right.
But I tell you, as you briefly mentioned earlier, you had a horrific spill, which put you out of the game for a long time. And tell us what happened that day.
You know, it was one of those race nights there at Los Alamitos. We were going 870 yards, which is normally mixed, you know, with quarter horses and thoroughbreds, or, you know, it's a flat 660-yard dash. And I was actually on an Appaloosa, and I always tell people, I say, you know, I call them happy appies, and the one I rode had no spot. And she could actually run. I had won a race on, like, the race, you know, like the time before or whatever. And we were on we was sitting, like, second and third, but right behind the leader, and the horse on the outside came, and he went to whooping his horse and never picked up the reins, and he dropped me. But when he dropped me, he broke my horse's shoulder, and I hit the ground. And when she fell, I fell, and there was probably like four horses behind her. Some of the horses were able to go around me. The one horse that Cody Jensen was on went to clear me, and his front feet did, but his back feet didn't. And when he come down, his feet come down and right in the middle of my spine, and it cracked my back. I could just feel that crunch when it hit. Oh, my. That was like the worst. I mean, that whole injury there, you know, have you ever seen that race? I'm like, I don't want to see that race, because I can play that back in my mind like it just happened 30 minutes ago. Just that whole scene, it was not good. You know, when you get injured like that, you know, you never wonder, you don't know how bad you hurt until things start to calm down. My body went into like a hard shock because I had an injury that it's never had before. You know, I've broke hands, you know, my thumb, my wrist, ankles, feet, all the time. It seemed like I'm always breaking my feet and horse jumped the rail or something with me. But when that horse fractured my spine. That was a feeling that you never forget. And, it was bad. It was really bad.
And so that just makes me cringe. I was very fortunate in the fact that every spill I had, I was knocked out cold and I don't remember anything. So the fact that you remember what that was like, I can't imagine. And that had to make it, I would think, more difficult to want to get back out there again. But obviously you missed it. But you were out for how long? Five years?
But if I got hurt, it's so funny because when you say that, I guess I told that story so much to all the doctors that would call me, and they would call me by paperwork. My son was little, he was only two. He started answering the phone, and the doctor would be like, yes, is the hockey there? First thing he say, you know, he got hurt January 5th, 2002. He started being my agent on the phone for me. But, yeah, I had got hurt. It was 2002, and I wound up coming back. And I started getting on horses again maybe in May of 07, and I started riding races back. Right after that, Pomona, when they got to Pomona, maybe a few months later, it was a journey, you know. I never even thought I would come back to the track, not even ride a horse again. You know, the whole step of me even being able to walk again was going to be a journey. Mm. And I don't know, I'm very blessed. I'm thankful that, you know, I am up and moving again, because there's so many guys before me that had the same injury, just paralyzed, and guys after me.
Right.
So I do look at it as a blessing, you know, every day, you know. Every day's not going to be the same. I don't care what nobody say, you know. We're going to have good days and bad days. But after an injury like that, every day is good to me, because I am walking and I'm doing a lot of things that a lot of people are not able to do anymore.
I can't imagine coming back from that when you didn't even know if you were going to be able to walk again, much less ride. And then you end up riding California Chrome. And I mean, that's incredible. That's incredible. And you have to spend some time in a big brace for that back injury. And that had to be difficult.
Oh, that was the worst. I was able to meet a guy that actually designed a back brace for me. It's so funny. He said he grew up on a farm and he hated animals. He said, so he's going to do something special for me. He said, I'm going to make you something that you're going to be able to get on a horse and ride with. I'm like, really? He's like, no, seriously. So, yeah, he designed a back brace for me. It only allowed me to go forward so far and only back so far. Everything I wore was sweatpants and button-up shirts. I looked like a tourist, like I was coming off somebody's planet that never even seen people before. You know, I was wearing weird-looking clothes, but I had to wear everything that was comfortable. You know, when I had to wear button-up shirts, because I didn't have to, but, you know, when you out in public and you wearing this back brace looking like a RoboCop, everybody got a question. They want to stop and ask you, so I needed to cover it up. So, yeah, it was a journey. It was definitely a journey to get back. But without that back brace, I would have never made it back. That thing was better than any medicine they could have put me on.
Why did you want to come back after that?
You know, if you talk to any rider, and I know for me for a fact, I never wanted injury to be my reason that I had to quit. You know, I wanted to quit because, you know, I wasn't having fun no more. I couldn't make the weight anymore. I never wanted to go out because something else put me out of something I love. And another thing, I think, you know, I watched so many of my old races, and, you know, my son used to go get this box of pictures I had, and I got tired of telling him the same story. But what about this picture? I'm like, I just told this dude the same thing. And, you know, stuff that start playing back in your mind. And, you know, once I got up and could kind of get myself mobile again and start moving around, and the doctor kind of put me on, like, light restrictions, which is hard-headed for anybody from the racetrack. We don't know what light restrictions are. This pure determination has got me back so fast, you know. But you got to have support of people around you. You know, I had some of the strongest support of everybody you could ever think about, whether it was family, friends, neighbors, everybody, you know. And that hard determination, it brought me back. That really brought me back.
What was it like, the feeling, when you rode your first race back?
Torture. I thought I was fit, you know, because I had got back, and You know, I called Walter Solis, who's one of my very good friends. That's really like a dad to me. You know, I spoke with Walter and to Jack Gambert and told him, hey, I won't be coming back. I need horses to get on. So I think Walter probably put me on joggers a couple of days, and Jack seen me, get over here and help me. I'm like, I'm not ready. He's like, well, why don't you show up? So I go over, and I think I work a horse with Jack like 5 days. The first 4 days back, I was huffing and puffing. And I come back, my legs were just burning on me or whatever. And so Jack tell me, he said, I'll see you tomorrow. I got one to go 7-8. So I looked at that man like, are you trying to kill me? Are you serious? I've been going almost 5 years. You think I'm ready to go 7-8 of a mile? Jack told me, he said, you don't ride the whole 7-8. He said, the horse catches you. You don't pack it. He said, just sit there. So it was actually, it was an experience coming back. But that first race back, oh, my. I thought I was ready. I couldn't wait to get back in that jack room and lay down. That nap wasn't long enough to recuperate. It was hard on me. But, you know, it just took time. You know, when you're out that long, I don't care how much you jog, how much you swim, how many bikes you get on and ride, how much you think you can gallop, how many horses you work, it's nothing like that first race back because your adrenaline is pumping. That I got to get there. It's got that motivation, you know. And you're not just out there by yourself. You know, you out there with eight or nine or other riders. So, you know, your mind is running fast all the time.
What made you, and you came back and you rode for quite a bit longer after that injury, which is incredible. And what made you decide to hang up the jock boots and to start galloping?
You know, just getting more injuries. You know, I was probably say the last one, you know, I got pinned down pretty bad, you know, in a quarter horse race. And that mare just tore my ankle up bad. You know, it left me with a bunch of chips in my ankle. And I wasn't right, you know. I wasn't right for me. I wasn't right for the people that's allowing me to ride these horses. And I'm just saying, you know what, now it's time to take a break. You know, I'm like one of them old race horses. You know, you got some talent, but I think I need a hard blitz and turn me out for a while. You know, it was just that agony, you know, just that pain of knowing that I couldn't perform at 100%. And if I'm not right, I'm not right for the people that's allowing me to ride their horses. And it wouldn't be right to say, well, I'm still trying. No, I don't want to just still be trying. I want to be good at what I do. So I just hung it up. And it's so much easier for me to gallop and work horses because I'm not, like they say, oh, you don't got them little black tissue boots on, you know. I couldn't stand for horses to bump me away from the gates. I was just so sensitive about everything. And I knew then, it's time to stop. It's time to stop. Let's regroup and do something else. Let's go back to where we started. We can always go back to riding races later, but let's go back to point A and see where we are from there.
Well, you definitely rode at 100% on the back of California Chrome, getting him ready for his incredibly successful career. Yaji, we only have 1 minute left. I can't believe it. But really quickly here, would you please tell our audience what you're doing now?
Well, now that Chrome is gone, I'm back to myself, back to pony rides and a big smile for everybody. So, you know, no time off. We got back. I got red back and worked horses yesterday. So today was actually my day off. So I'm here now to come to take care of ponies and clean stalls. My job never stops.
Always busy, Dehaji, always busy. And folks, if anyone's ever out at Santa Anita, they have to check out your pony business. You have pony rides there in the infield, yeah?
That's correct. The name of the pony ride business is called Got Ponies. And so we do. So, yes, we're located in the infield at Santa Anita, right next to the Seabiscuit exhibit. So all the families are welcome. You can come see our ponies. You won't forget us, that's for sure.
I love it. I hear that Chocolate is your favorite pony.
Yeah, Chocolate's one of my favorite ponies. I've had him for quite a while. So, yeah, he's an attraction. He's definitely an attraction.
Dehaji Gladney, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can listen to here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And don't forget, join me and the Big A, Anthony Stabile, tomorrow for live racing coverage at 3 o'clock Eastern Time here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.